Welcome to No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. We promise to inspire, challenge, and make you think beyond the ordinary, reaching for a life lived for love alone. Stay tuned for the next 30 minutes and tell your friends to join us every Saturday night at 5:30 and Sunday morning at 9:30 Central Standard Time. And now, here's my husband, Bishop Randy Dean.
Good morning, good day, good evening, good week, good month, good year. Thank you for being back here again for this episode of the No BS Bishop. I'm Bishop Randy Dean. I'm alive to love. I believe lesser values than love are worse than just lesser values. I believe lesser values than love have the capacity to slide into the nothingness, into the vague void of just managing relationships with no joy. Managing relationships without love is to manage life without quality. But when we manage life and manage relationships by love, well, then we elevate the quality of our life and of our love and of our possibilities in this world. I'm a big believer that all of life is full of some possibility somewhere. And so as we journey along in this world, in this tough, rough and tumble, one day is up, the next day is down, maybe the next week is down, and you just have to keep fighting forward. I just believe that the one quality that keeps me steady, keeps me living, keeps me abundant living, is the power and the significance of love. And that's why I come here week in and week out to meet with you, to talk to you, to journey with you on some level toward the significance of love. I haven't said this in a while, and I want to remind you that I know when I speak of love, people can often think, well, I was around you once and you weren't loving, or I heard you say something that wasn't loving. They will occasionally bring up my least best in life. I remember when I was pastoring and preaching every week, every Sunday morning, if I preached on love, I was sure to have a few people come to me and explore with me how I was not as loving as they thought I should be. So here's my answer to that. Guilty as charged. I do not present myself to be the expert living human being on love. I do present myself, however, as one guy. I know there are others, but I know about me. I'm just one guy in a pursuit of the understanding, in the pursuit of the pilgrimage, the marathon, the journey, the reach for love. When we say love is the most important quality of the human existence, when we say, as Jesus said, there is one commandment and it is love, and when we say, as 1 Corinthians 13 tells us, love never fails, when we say those high-sounding, high-faluting, as somebody might say, whatever faluting is, those high, that raise the bar of love to that kind of height, well, it seems that we need to reach for a grasp, a practice, and an understanding of how to get there. So if I've been a failure at love with somebody out there, please forgive me. I was not intending to fail. I was intending to reach. And in my practice of love, some of my practice was unsuccessful. But like any good doctor, doctors practice medicine. This guy right here, me, the No BS Bishop, I am alive to love and I'm practicing love. I'm hoping to make more successes than failures, but along the way, it could become evident to someone, wow, he wasn't as loving as I thought he would be. Bear with me. I'll get there. Now, to that purpose and to that end, I have written Love's Creed, something that I hold in front of me routinely, remind myself of, especially here. I remind you of it as well. To live by a creed is to say something routinely so that that routine comment, that routine phraseology, that routine lilt of your own voice saying these words calls you to attention. It says, set up straight and do this to your own consciousness. It's a command to yourself. So Love's Creed for me is this. I'll say it in total, then I'll come back and I'll give it to you piece by piece like a minister would at a marriage altar. All right, here it is in total. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans and dreams and designs locked into anything and everything that is love. I am unavailable for anything less. There you have it, Love's Creed. If you'd like a copy of that, you could write me at randydeanministries@gmail.com. That Randy Dean Ministries is all one word, lowercase. Send me an email. Tell me where I can send this to you. I'd be happy to write a copy of this and send it your way. Now, let's go back, and I will repeat it for you in bursts, short bursts. Again, like vows at a wedding altar. Are you ready? Repeat after me. I'm alive to love. I'm not on this earth for hate. I'm alive for love. I'm not breathing, eating, and sleeping to regain energy for causing pain. I'm alive with plans, dreams, and designs locked into anything and everything that is love. I am unavailable for anything less than love. There you have it. I think it's a high standard to call your soul and your meditations toward. I think my soul and meditations are one and the same. My constant conversation internally is where my soul, I think, lives. I can't prove that, but that's just my own theory. And in my meditation, if I meditate this, you become what you meditate. If you meditate anger, you become angry. If you meditate peace, you'll become peaceful. If you meditate love, you'll become loving. Today, I've run across a quote recently by Eric Fromm, who wrote a book called The Art of Loving. I don't agree with everything Eric Fromm preaches and teaches and lectures from his book, but I do like this particular paragraph, all right? So it's a little lengthy, so bear with me. Eric Fromm says this: the main condition for the achievement of love is the overcoming of one's narcissism. Narcissism is being obsessed with yourself. The narcissistic orientation is one in which one experiences as real, as in which one's experiences are only real that exist within oneself, while the phenomena in the outside world have no reality in themselves but are experienced only from the viewpoint of their being useful or dangerous to the one. The opposite pole to narcissism is objectivity. Now catch this carefully. It is the faculty to see other people and things as they are, objectively, and to be able to separate this objective picture from a picture which is formed only by one's desires and fears. That is a mouthful. That's a headful. Let me read it again quickly here, but I do want you to catch his point. The main condition for the achievement of love is the overcoming of one's narcissism. The narcissistic orientation is one in which one experiences as real only that which exists within oneself, while all the phenomena in the outside world have no reality in themselves, but are experienced only from the viewpoint of their being useful or dangerous to the one. The opposite pole to narcissism is objectivity. It is the faculty to see other people and things as they are. I want to really hone in on those three words. As they are, objectively, and to be able to separate this objective picture from a picture which is formed by one's desires and fears. In a simple way, love is being able to see others as they are and to view them in a passionate empathy, a sense and passionate meaning. I'm committed to the notion. I'm committed to seeing people this way, to objectively see them through a passionate empathy, not just through how can they serve me. That's narcissism. How can I define them in the way I want to define them? That's narcissistic. I'm convinced there's an awful lot of faith expressions, spiritual expressions, Christian and otherwise, that are very narcissistic because we don't see the world around us objectively. We don't look at the world through the eyes and the lens of love. We look at the world as to how can we change them to fit my objectivity, my needs, my purposes in getting you to talk like me, think like me, be like me, or at least some close twin to me. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that may feel like religion or feel like some kind of a church expression, but that's just narcissism. Narcissism will drag you away from the capacity to see people as they are and to love everyone around you, not through the lens of how can they serve you, be like you, but through the lens of love that says there's a better you out there somewhere, and that better you is formed inside of me through love. And love is self-giving. Love is self-sacrificing. Love isn't wrapped up in how do we make you figure, how do I figure you out so you can make me better? No, love says, I'm here just simply to offer you the best that I am for the best that you can be. To move me away from the narcissistic notion that everybody's here some way, somehow, to serve me. Because, see, love is not just primarily a relationship to specific people. I want you to hear this. Love is a lifelong attitude. It's creating space in our character to determine our relatedness to others and to the world as a whole, and not just toward some way to form people into a line of serving me. And even if it is that line of services, just don't behave badly, because then I'll love you better. Don't behave badly, because then I can be more available to you. Don't behave badly, or then I'll think better of you. No, love says I'm going to think the same of you, whether you are like me or you're not like me, or whether you live a life that's in any way agreeable to me or not agreeable to me. Narcissism, I think, gets sold off as religious fervor in so many ways, because narcissism seeks to form the world around us, shape the world around us, work hard on the world around us until they are all serving me really well. Well, that's not love, ladies and gentlemen, because love is what Jesus does. You know, if you've ever asked yourself, what would I do on the last day of my life? What would, if I knew this was my last day of living, what would I do if I had the freedom to do anything I wanted to do? If I had the power to do anything I wanted, what would I do? Well, Jesus knew it was his last day. Jesus knew it is his last hour. He knew it was his last week. And what did Jesus do on the last night of his life? He served his disciples. He washed their feet. He gave them the Last Supper. He loved them as they were, not as he wanted them to be. And sure, he gave them a commandment, but that commandment was what? Love one another as I have loved you. So to view the world through the lens of the unselfish passion of empathy for others, the unselfish passion of knowing that others have a value that's equal, and sometimes maybe see them as a greater value than your own. To see others in a non-narcissistic manner, it'll drag you kicking and screaming out of religion, out of some religious expression, I should say. Because religion can devolve easily into serving me, making me happy at the expense of all others, making me think things that I need to pound into other people's brains, making me have a purpose about telling other people how wrong they are and how right I am. Like I said last week, is sometimes we view our evangelistic efforts as sit down, shut up, and listen to me. We need to talk. Well, that's not talking. That's not communication. That's a monologue. Shut up, listen. I'm right, you're wrong. Now, let me love you. Well, no, that's not love. Love says, I need to listen to you. I probably need to listen to you more than I'm going to speak to you. That's the opposite of narcissism. Eric Fromm says that this is the true objectivity. It is to listen to the person exactly as they are. It is to listen on some level that is passionately quiet, passionately still, passionately unwilling to subject other people's ideas and opinions. It's passionately devoted to rising to the level of a kind word, and then a kindness of listening. The narcissistic view, though, will put you in certain church settings and have you convinced by certain church priorities that we are here to just turn everybody our way. We're here to make everybody else look like us, talk like us, set like us, walk like us, talk like us. And that comes off as some form of evangelism. Here's the truth, though. The church, if you believe in the church at all, you know the church was born on the day of Pentecost. Acts chapter 2 describes it, when the disciples were gathered, actually in still a little bit of confusion and trauma and fear from the death of Christ a month and a half prior. And on the day of Pentecost, the Holy Spirit came blowing into their room together, into their gathering. And suddenly they had a new voice. They had a new form of communication. They had their mouths were not just filled with their fears of yesterday. Their ideals, their ideas were not being driven by fears of the surrounding group around them, though they had legitimate fears of that group around them because the group around them had married into Rome and Religion Incorporated at the time, and they crucified Christ. But on the day of Pentecost, their languages were changed, meaning that what they contemplated, what they meditated, what they thought about the world around them was radically changed. And others around that particular area started to hear this sound coming from them. You know, one might say it's similar to a spiritual form of what I'm doing right now, a sound on the radio. They were hearing, this is a different sound. And their voice is communicating. I'm convinced that we people of faith, we folks of faith, could take a lesson from that, however else you view the day of Pentecost, and understand that it was removing the subjectivity, meaning the subjects about me, into an objectivity to see the world around me in a different objective. And that objective is love, to communicate in a way that isn't standard. It hasn't been the same old sing song that we've had for decades. To know that there's something that the world is waiting to hear. They're waiting to hear not how to become more like us. In fact, I would propose that through love, the world is waiting to see if we can be more like them. Oh, I just said dangerous words there. More like them, not in the context of our behaviors, but in the context of our empathy, in the context of our capacity to understand and to see folks as humans made in the image of God, whatever their behaviors, whatever their lifestyles, whatever their words, whatever their miseries, to see the world around us and to be able to communicate out of having conquered the narcissistic, selfish ways that we've often been given to be in, and to rise to a new shining of a voice that says something worth hearing. And love is that voice. It's the relationship of not just a specific person, but an attitude of life, my ordination of character that just keeps me determined to relate to others on one basis, and that is love. And I know well that there are many people all around us, many people that surround us in varying stages of life that they practice behaviors that are, well, in some cases, repulsive to us. Their behaviors are, in fact, some of them are dangerous, and we know that. But what is my sole purpose in life? Well, the purpose in life is not to avoid pain and to seek pleasure. The purpose in life is to seek the will of God, no matter what may come, pain or pleasure, to do the will of God, come what may. That's what Martin Luther King Jr. said once. My purpose isn't to avoid pain. My purpose is to do the will of God. To do it, to find the pleasure of God, and then to act out of that pleasure, not my own self-pleasure, not my own self-serving, but the pleasures of God. What are they? How can I be attuned to the love of God, to love God with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength? And like Augustine said, love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then do what you please. What he presumes there is that if you will love God that way, if you will love God in such totality, there's nothing left of you, then what you please will be pleasing to God. So that's why I'm here. That's why I'm on this radio broadcast every week, to escape the trap of narcissism, to escape the trap of self-preservation, to escape the trap of viewing the world around me as wrong and I'm right. Now let's get everybody talking like me. Well, that's not how the book of Acts tells it. The church started when we began to talk in a language they could grasp. I promise you this, the world understands the language of love. Well, let me bring this particular broadcast in for a landing and lead you toward practices that I believe contribute to love. And the first practice is to breathe well. Breathing well means I'm taking good care of my thought processes enough to pay attention to my breathing. You know, when we pay attention to our breathing, we may be aware of the fact that, wow, we're taking short breaths, or we're taking deep breaths, but no real oxygen's getting in there. So may our breaths be paced. May our breathing be healthy. May our sitting or standing or walking or talking or stillness be done with deep breaths of wholeness down into the basement of our lungs. So on the count of three, get your feet flat on the floor, set up straight, and take the deepest breath you can physically and hold it in against your diaphragm. All right? One, two, three. Inhale. And hold it there, and exhale. I say this every week. If you could do that 5 minutes a day, every week, you could lower your blood pressure, you could settle your soul, settle your mind, still the crashing waves of thoughts that are too often out of control in your mind. Breathing well can lead you to living well. And the next practice is something that I'm becoming quite famous or infamous for. Some people love it. Some people are a little nervous with me when I challenge them to do it. But it is meaningful. And that is to take the three most magical, holy, and charmed words in the human language. Those three words, I love you. Put them into a very determined and slow cadence. Make them the three words that matter to you in the moment you say them, without any distraction, to look somebody in the eye, get their attention. Yes, I know for a lot of people it's awkward, it's weird. They'll look at you as if you're about to punch them in the face. Well, no, but you are about to grab their heart. Look somebody in the eye. Make it as meaningful as you know, and be aware of the awkwardness, and say, hey, I love you. If nothing else, you give them something to talk about the rest of the day, right? But in many cases, in fact, I would say most cases, they'll walk away with a memory of that moment that will cause them to take stock and inventory of how they're living, how they can be more loving, how they can be more attuned to the people around them outside of their own narcissistic world. So look somebody in the eye with a cadence that's still and powerful, full of your heart, and say those three holy words, I love you. I want you to hear me say that to those of you listening today. I love you. And I want to speak on behalf of the God of all creation, the one who gave us that image that is singular to God. God says, I love you. Thank you for being here today for this episode of the No BS Bishop. I'm alive to love. I believe lesser values than love devolve into bait and switch, or BS in whatever other form you think it is. We are alive to love, not to manipulate, not to shame, but alive to get out of our narcissistic traps and be lovers of all humankind. Now go out there and do something beautiful, folks, because ugly is getting done to death. It's time for love to take center stage. Happy trails, y'all.
Thank you for being with us today for this episode of No BS Bishop, Alive to Love with Bishop Randy Dean. Be sure to join us again here next week, Saturday at 5:30 p.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. Central Standard Time. Feel free to contact us with your questions or comments at randydeanministries@gmail.com, and we welcome your financial support at paypal.me/randydeanministries. No BS Bishop is a service of WPCA Radio and Randy Dean Ministries.